The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to this special Italian Wine Podcast broadcast. This episode is a recording off Clubhouse, the popular drop-in audio chat. This Clubhouse session was taken from the Wine Business Club and Italian Wine Club. Listen in as wine lovers and experts alike engage in some great conversation on a range of topics in wine. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. And remember to subscribe and rate our show wherever you tune in.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Clubhouse Ambassadors Corner. Today, we have Elena Barattini, and it's her first time to do Clubhouse. So welcome, Elena. How are you doing?
Hello. Hi. I'm very well. Yourself?
Yeah, good. I'm good. But where are you right now?
I'm in London.
Okay. So before I turn over the floor to you, I would like to introduce you first to our audience. So yes, welcome everyone. We have Giorgio. We also have you. Hi, you. Hi, Marina, Violetta, Elena, Roberto. How are you, Elena and Andrea? So thank you so much for coming. Remember that this Clubhouse is being recorded and we will put this up probably in the next 2 weeks. So Elena here, she is our Italian wine ambassador and she actually became one of the best students and awarded by Franco Zeliani Award. Tell us more about this VIA journey. Actually, we just finished our VIA New York. Tell us about how was it for you and especially your experience, because now I'm reading your bio and you started enjoying being a wine educator throughout your career path. So tell me more about that.
Well, I kind of work in different fields of the wine industry since I've moved to London in 2011. But then, really, as I was studying my WSET diploma, I studied also the educator program, and I really enjoy. So I wanted to build a career in the wine education. And during lockdown, I actually applied for the EMW, but unfortunately, I didn't get in. And then I kind of reset my mind on what to do moving forward. And I really wanted to start specializing in Italian wine. And so when I got to learn about the VIA program, I was really, really excited. And I might say is one of the best things that I've done in my life. I really recommend it to, you know, fellows, colleagues, particularly if someone wants to, you know, really deep dive into Italian wine. And I really look forward to maybe one day apply for the expert.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm rooting for you for sure.
Thank
so
you.
For this first Clubhouse you've ever done, why did you select Christian Speconia as your favorite producer?
Well, first of all, Christian is a wonderful person, and that is really important to highlight. But there are many reasons. Well, first is a really an incredible talented young winemaker. Just to highlight some of these recent achievements, he's been listed amongst the 50 best young winemakers in the world by the American Food and Drink magazine. He's been recognized as one of the 40 under 40 wine industry leaders by Fortune, awarded the title of the best Italian winemaker of 2023 by the Italian Association of Vinaway Selection, but also the winery is featured among the 50 best wineries in Italy on the magazine Food and Wine, and also recognized as one of the best, one of the 100 Italian excellences by Forbes in 2023, so a lot. But what struck me the most about Christian is he's so passionate about his land and his wines. Also very sensitive to contemporary issues such as climate change, sustainability. So I thought it would have been very, very interesting to share all these his vision with the audience. But also, I really love Friuli Venezia Giulia wines, but probably I'm not the only one.
No, I think Emilia Marinig is in love with it too. Yes. Okay. Okay, so tell us, when did you first try the wines of Christian? And how did you discover the wines of Azienda Agricola Speconia?
It was long time ago. I was already in London. It was 2012. And I used to work for Fortuna Mason in their wine shop. And Fortuna Mason used to stock his wines. I think they still do. The very first wine that I tried was the Pinot Grigio Ramato. And for me, it was a revelation, really. Probably Christian will tell us about the wine later on. And then a couple of years ago, I went to Friuli and I visit a Christian's winery. I met him. And it was just like a crescendo of enthusiasm for his wines.
That's so beautiful. Since, you know, our listeners are ambassadors and they get very geeky on this part. So tell us the learning objectives that we should expect from this interview.
Well, first of all, I would really like to, share the knowledge and know more about the Friuli Colli Orientali, because Speconia is in the beating heart of the DOC. But also, I really like to know more about Christian's vision for the future, particularly linked with this, the sustainable viticulture, his organic approach, and all these very important subjects that I'm sure are very, very interesting for all of us.
Okay, so I am going to mute myself and later on I will be back if there are any questions from the audience, okay?
Thank you. Hello, Christian, how are you?
Hello, Helena. Ciao.
Ciao. So nice to hear from you. Thank you so much for, accepting this invitation and, sparing some time with us, because I know you're very busy, but you're always so kind. So thank you so much.
No, thanks to you, and most of all, thanks for the wonderful introduction. I hope to be at the level of the expectation now.
Of course you will.
Thank you so
much. Of course you will. Well, first of all, just to introduce a bit Christian. So Christian is represented the third generation of winemakers of the Speconia family. He was born probably not very far from the estate in Rosazzo, and is running the entire business now with his brother, little brother, right?
No, he's bigger than me.
Bigger brother, okay.
Yes. But 6 years older, and so,
They're both
so,
very young.
Yeah.
So the state under vines is 25 hectares, all farmed organically. As we said, is in the middle of the Colli Orientali in Friuli. But I think it would be much more interesting if our audience could hear from your own voice the whole story. So how your grandfather arrived to this place, and everything happened since the 60s and until you took over with the business.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
I go. Well, like you said very well, everything started with my grandfather, Leonardo Speconia, that in the 1963, after some years in Switzerland as an emigrant, because Helena, after the Second World War, our region, Friuli Venezia Giulia, suffered a lot, the poverty, and wasn't an easy situation. Also because we were close to the borderline with Yugoslavia and things like this. And so many, many people went abroad in Switzerland, in Belgium, in Argentina and Australia. And my father, grandfather, did the same. He went for 5 years in Switzerland to try to find some money for the family. And after 5 years, he comes back in the region, in Friuli Venezia Giulia. And for the first time, he passed through the hills of Rocca Bernarda in Corno di Rosazzo. And he totally fell in love with the beauty and the history of this zone. And so he decided to invest his savings by buying a small plot of land in this area, in the heart of the Friuli vineyard. And everything started. You know, initially, the company was focused on dairy, a little bit of cereal cultivation, wine production, most of all for self-consumption and subsistence for the family. But year after year, thanks to the commitment of my father, Graziano, the company began to improve the techniques of vineyard management and winemaking, and so specializing the estate mainly on the wine production. We have to say that this was a very typical situation for all the family in our zone in that period, because, you know, in the beginning, a lot of winery born like farms to have something to eat.
Of course.
And today we are at the third generation with me and my brother Michele, and we cultivate about 25 hectares of vineyard, and we produce more or less 120,000 bottles each year, which we sell in 40 countries around the world. And so, you know, Helena, all my life turn around this story, this history. You have to know that when I was a child, I accompanied my grandfather and father to the vineyard in their daily work routine. And so we can say that basically I started to work in the vineyard when I was really young.
So you started literally to walk in the vineyard.
Absolutely.
From crawling to walk by in the vineyard.
That's true. You know, in the beginning, it was for me like a game, because to stay outside with the family that was all the day involved in the company's work. And seeing this passion in the eyes of my father and grandfather that led them day after day to try to improve more and more began to give me the interest to be part of this adventure. And for that, the entry into the daily business was for me very natural and spontaneous.
Italian Wine Podcast, brought to you by Mama Jumbo Shrimp.
And year after year, then, you know, after completing my studies in viticulture and enology, I decided also to go out of the winery for some period to understand what there was outside in the world. And so I made some experiences and study trips in the most important Italian and French wine growing regions. And, you know, Elena, each of these occasions, every meter walked into the vineyard of other zones, every meeting with other winemakers allowed me to hear informations that helped me to discover more and more the world of wine in its beautiful complexity. And most of all, at the same time, increase in me the passion for this work. And so I really decide to go on and to try to do my best to give my contribution at the adventure of my family and the world of wine of the Friuli.
Well, this is beautiful. It sounds that you couldn't do differently. So that's very nice, because it gives you also an idea of your passion, which is really something infectious, I will say.
It's my life, Ellen, I see. Yeah. And to put inside of the bottle what is my dream, what is my way of thinking about the wine, it's something that gives me such an energy and such a joy, because, you know, it feels like a freedom of expression. And this is something that I love so much to share with the people.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Of course, your passion is really immense, but also you have the you know, you have the fortune to really be in a place where there are there's a matrix of magic interaction with the climate, topography, soil. So can you tell us a bit more about, you know, where Speconia is located and how everything really contributes to the making of these special wines?
You say a beautiful thing, and you have to imagine that every time that I started a tour of the winery, of the vineyard with the people, I always say, this is a paradise for the vine and for the life. To let you understand how much I believe in the potential of this zone and how much it's beautiful. To let understand to the people, our winery is located on the hills of Rocca Bernarda in Corno di Rosazzo, that is really in the heart of the Friuli wineland. And it's close to the borderline with Slovenia. So we are in the northeastern part of Italy, just 1 hour far away from Venice. And to give an idea to the people, this region has been used for viticulture since the Romans times, because it's got some ideal vine growing condition with unique and exceptional climate and pedoclimatic characteristic for making quality wines. There are three macro characteristics that are very specific of this area. First of all, the lucky that in less than 70 kilometers, we pass from 2000 meters to the water of the seaside. In fact, our hills are located in the middle between the Carnic and Julian Alps, which protect the vines from the cold wind of Northern Europe, and at south, the Adriatic seaside, that, you know, guarantee a constant influence of milder airs. And this is really unique for the quality of the wines, because thanks to this, for this proximity between mountains and sea, we have the lucky to enjoy important temperature excursion between day and night. And this is such a fundamental condition for the aromatic quality of the wines, and that at the same time for the maintenance of the acidity in the grapes, you know. Another important value, sure, is the ventilation. The famous Bora wind from northeast, that it's a fresh and dry wind, very strong in the winter period, but incredibly fantastic for us during the summer and the autumn, because, you know, permit to create a drier climate with lower humidity, less humidity, and that at the same time amplifying the temperature excursion. Okay. And but most of all, the greatest thing of this ventilation is that thanks to this drier situation, we have a lower risk of diseases on the grapes and lower risk of cryptogamic adversities. And so we can really wait for a longer time on the plant, letting the grapes to obtain such a beautiful maturation. And this is one of the key to obtain a great balance in the wine for me. And the third fundamental macro characteristic of this area, it's sure the soil. The Ponca, the famous Ponca of Collio and Colle Orientali, you know. You have to imagine that in ancient times, we are speaking about 50 to 35 million years ago, the Friulan plain was submerged under the seaside, and the coasts were just situated before the current Julian Alps. And this was great, because thanks to this situation, under this old lagoon, during the million of years, there was a slow sedimentation process of the minerals coming from the erosion of the Alps rocks, from the water of the seaside, and from the shells of the different fish species that lived in those water. And this process creates a kind of soil that, from a geological point of view, we call flysch. What is the flysch? The flysch is a kind of soil with different substrate of marl, that is a limestone clay, very rich in minerals and microelements, and sandstone, that are a calcified sand, that permit also a good drainage of the water. And so this mix of soil, it's so fantastic for to obtain quality grapes, thanks to this richness in micro elements, and also for, like I told you, the good capacity of a nice drainage of the water. So putting all together, we understand why we have the lucky to drink well in our zone.
Well, it needs a bit more than that, I'm afraid. It needs you.
Bad.
But it's really, you know, I still have a piece of ponca in my bag, and I use it when I teach my students about Friuli-Venezia Giulia. But it's breaking, so I have to come back. And collect some more ponca.
We will be waiting for you.
Oh, that would be fantastic. But that is really great, because you really explain well all the interaction of this natural factor. Now, as I would say in my educator clothes, let's move to the human factor. Yeah, how Speconia interact with this, and Christian particularly, with this fantastic environment. So first of all, what would you say is your philosophy as a wine producer?
Very nice question. And you know, I think that my philosophy and my dream is to let express the identity and the elegance of the Friulan wines, and to search for a balance in our agriculture practices that can improve the health and the quality of the land that surround our vineyards. This is really my goal when I, you know, every day start a new day. And in my mind, this is the idea that I want to transfer in my wines and in my place and in my way of work.
Yeah, so I guess that this is very much linked with the decision of becoming organic, right? Because
exactly,
of course, if you want the land to speak, you really need to respect the land, right?
You know, Elena, one of my most important goals is really to be able not only to keep the land that we cultivate as intact as possible, but to try to help it to obtain again a great balance of biodiversity, vitality, healthiness of the environment, so that it can best face also the years ahead and the climate change of the last years.
That's very, very interesting. Can you tell us more how this organic approach and the sustainability approach is implemented in your everyday operations, basically? I know that you don't only have vines, you have a lot of other things going on. Can you tell us a little bit about the farm and the plants and everything? And the bees?
Absolutely, absolutely. My dream is really to recreate an ecosystem at 360 degrees. And so this is why in the last years, we restarted to plant also other kind of plant, like olive trees, cherry trees. You know that, first of all, also has got a very important role for the protection of our hills, because, you know, the ponca has got a lot of erosion. It's very sensible to the erosion. Mm-hmm. And so to plant other kind of trees in our zone with the root system of these trees help to stabilize the hilly slopes of our area, and so to preserve the quality of this this land. And like you say very well, we also installed several bee hives for the production of honey, of course, but most of all also because the bees has got such a fundamental role, you know, for the balance of the ecosystem and for the quality of the biodiversity. Because thanks to them, we have the lucky to have a better quality of the flower richness around us. And, you know, in my mind, if there is a word that I always search, is balance in everything. And to obtain the balance in my vineyard, I need the balance of the ecosystem around my vineyard. And it's the motive that really let me understand how much was fundamental to start in the organic and biodynamic farming, and also the permaculture, that is something that I admire so much. But to arrive to make a great quality in the agriculture with this kind of practice, you know, it's not so easy Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the last year, I've been reading so much, you know, to try to learn every day something new. I have visited so many wine growers that are forefront of these practices to be able to understand everything better and better. And that at the same time, to make a great work, I started a study of the components of the ecosystem that surrounded our plant by analyzing, you know, the characteristic of the climate, of the soil, the fauna. Because nowadays, the more we want to work naturally, the more we need to be able to understand the details and the nuances that surround us. Mm-hmm. Because we are facing a completely different climate than in the past. And to get to this, you know, Elena, we have started the study of all the possible information that we have around us. And so, you know, temperatures, light hours, rainfall, the agronomical characteristic of our plants. So to give you an idea, every year for every vineyard, we count the number of bunches per plant, the average weight of the bunches, the weight of the berries, all the analytics characteristic, because this is the only way to create an identity card of my vineyard, of my plants. And so after, to understand how to work for every vineyard, what to do in every vineyard, and in what moment. Wow. You know, if we have to say something, in the past, usually, all the work in all the surface were always the same. The treatment, the nutrition for mm-hmm. the soil, and things like this. Nowadays, instead, we are really making work like, sartorial work on yeah. every single square meter to understand really how to help the plants and our land to arrive to a balance that permit to work in organic and biodynamic, obtaining also great result in the quality of the fruit. And second thing, you know, Elena, we are all the day inside of our vineyard.
Yeah.
And so in the past, when we use also chemical treatment, things like this, we started to see that the soil changed, the color of the soil changed, the life inside of the vineyard was always lower. And so we understand that it's not just a question of making wine, but it's a question to try to preserve my land and the life of this plant for the future. And this is something that you have also, you know, to really believe in what you are doing. And not only because now it's fashionable, speaking about sustainability of organic, because, you know, it's a moment of the history where it's nice to speak about this. It's something that we believe, first of all, for our family, for our zone, and for the dream to bless to our child something better than today.
Absolutely, absolutely. But also, I think is the, you know, the direct benefit of what you're doing and what, you know, many growers are doing with this is literally, as you said at the beginning, the results in the glass of wine, because yeah. that glass of wine really speaks about the land rather than
exactly. And you know what, Elena, also we are looking to an incredible capacity of the plant to be more able to face the difficulties of the, you know, last vintages that sometimes are very extreme in the condition yeah. of the temperatures, of the rainfall, and to have a soil and a plant with this yes. balance, with mm. this richness of the biodiversity, absolutely, it's a key of quality, that mm. is sure. And we feel this in the grape, in the glass that we drink after, and in the capacity of the wine to have a great evolution in the time.
Mm, that's very good. Yeah. That's very good. So talking about climate change, we were having a little conversation earlier about the average temperature above a certain range in the last, 60 years, that increased dramatically. And you were saying to me about the fact that between the 60 and now, the average number of the days that the temperature above 30 or 40 is, I don't remember the degree.
30
is like
five times more,
five times
Elena.
More.
To give an idea to the people in our zone, in the 60s, like you say very well, the number of days that go above 30 degrees Celsius in a year were no more than 10, 12. Nowadays, we are speaking about at least 50, 55. But in some vintages, like, for example, 2022, we arrived to 68. Mm-hmm. So in few words, during all over the summer, the temperature is always above 30 degrees. Mm-hmm. Just when it rain, you know, it go down. Mm-hmm. And so what happened due to this thing? Of course, we have to rethink to some peculiarity of our way to make wine, to cultivate the plant. For an example, you know, in the past, the north-facing slopes were used only for cereal cultivation and orchard and things like this. Apple cultivation, you know, cherry. Nowadays, instead, those zones are among the most desired and south after areas to maintain a good acidity in the grapes and to have a great aromatic freshness. And this is an example, but another one could be, you know, another way to manage the soil works and the pruning, and at the same time make new choice on the rootstocks and biotypes of plants. So it's a phase of the history where our work need absolutely from us a great capacity to understand these details, this changing, and of course to react, helping the plant to go on in the better way. You know, in the past, the problem in our zone was to reach a full ripening of the grapes. Today, instead, we must be careful not to go over-ripening, to have too much alcohol and lower acidity. And so for that, I told you before how much is important for me to understand every single detail of every single square meter of my hill to prevent problem and to go in the best direction possible.
Wow, that's very interesting. So this north-facing slopes thing is I mean, in Friuli as a region, there actually an increasing appeal and price of these lesser, of you know, these were lesser slopes 20, 30 years ago. And probably nobody wanted to buy them to plant a vineyard, but... Did you notice already an increasing of prices and more demands of the of these lesser north facing slopes in the last...
Absolutely, Elena, and also for example higher zones that in the past were too much cold, you know,
higher altitude. You mean
High altitude, exactly. And so, absolutely, the zones that were very, very good in the past nowadays are not so good for every kind of variety.
Yeah.
Or to say, well, in the past, you know, the south faces zone, the higher zone of the hill were used for the white wines. Nowadays, of course, if we do a new vineyard in those zones, sure, we will plant red varietals and the white wines in another zone. And so there is a change in this way of decisions. Then, of course, you know, Elena, we can't move our hills in other zones. And so for that, there are kind of decisions that can help, like I told you before, some kind of biotypes inside of the same variety of grapes that has got a little bit slower maturation, change the rootstock in proportion with the past. And so these things help, however, to find a good balance. Friuli, I have to say, luckily, until today, suffer a little bit less than other zone this change of the climate. But of course, it's sure that from the 2003 until today, the direction is in the hottest season, more extremely even from the rain. Because just to make an example, in 2022, we have the hottest vintage of the last century in Friuli Venezia Giulia. So in practice, from March, April until September, we had every month 2 degrees more of medium temperature than in the past. Mm-hmm. Instead, at the opposite, 2023 was very, very cold and rainy in the beginning of the season in April and May. And in fact, this was a difficulty for, you know, try to maintain the sanity of the grapes, of the plant. But after close, very, very hot in September and October. So the direction is to go to warmer and hottest situation, but with extreme situation depending from the season. And the only way to contrast this is really to help the soil, most of all, to find a good balance, because this, you know, Elena, in the past we only look almost to the plants, but all the winemaker look to the plants, to what we can see upstairs. Nowadays, probably the most important focus is to make on the soil, the quality of the microbiological life of the soil, the quality of the biodiversity of the soil, because we see that it helps a lot to prevent problem from this extremization of situation.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You talk about biotypes, and this kind of trigger another question. I read on your website that you have a nursery where you grow different clones that facing extinction.
Yes, exactly.
That's very interesting. Can you tell us a bit more about this project and if you had already some results that you actually could use to implement in your winery?
Absolutely. We have this small nursery that, to give you an idea, it's a specific vineyard dedicated to this, where we grow clones and biotype of variety that are facing the danger of extinction using booth, gemme, I think the translation is booth, collected from the oldest vineyard of our region.
Oh, wow.
And this system, you know, allow us to study and to continue growing varieties which would became a distant memory. Because, you know, in the recent years, most of the works of the nurseries all over the world was focused only on certain type of varieties and biotype. Instead, in our opinion, a vineyard needs a great richness of diversity within the same type of grape. Because this allows to get more balance in the different vintages and at the same time can enhance the identity of a place and a winery. Just to give you an idea, inside some varieties, like for example, speaking about typical grape of our zone, Refosco, Friulano, there are more than 10, 12 biotypes that, you know, grew in different zone of the region with different characteristic of the microclimate. And so in the centuries, let's show small but important difference in the characteristic of the leaves, in the characteristic of the bunch. And, you know, I think that to have more diversity in the vineyard help to have a great identity in the wine.
So you do your muscle selection from the plant?
Yes, in few words, it's like a muscle selection. We can say that in this vineyard, for us, is more something to study.
Yeah.
But we have usually all the new plants that we create, we produce with muscle selection from our oldest vineyard. And that for us is fundamental, Helena. First of all, because, you know, we are speaking about materials that has got the lucky to adaptate themselves in a lot of years, almost a century sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so we see that when we plant a small vine obtained with this way of production, there is such a better reaction from the beginning. And most of all, you know, in the past, the farmers hasn't got so many technologies mm-hmm. and help to adjust some mistake in the work of in the vineyard and in the cellar. And so they have really to look to the best kind of biotype, best kind of grapes. And so sure, there are some old kind of variety that also has got an incredible history for this motive, because they reflect the decisions and the idea of making wine in our zone in the history.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Also, because otherwise, if it wasn't for this work that you do in this vineyard, these old biotypes will be completely lost.
So yes.
Probably this is going to be beneficial, not for your estate only at some point, probably further down the line. I hope so. So now let's go in the winery. Yeah, we've been around the hills. Let's go in the winery, because what I would like to know from you is, of course, you have a range of different wines, all I think except one that is a blend with Merlot. All your wines are based on native mm-hmm. grape varieties from the Colli Orientali. So what do you think? This is a tough question, because it's like deciding who is your favorite child. So first, if you want to talk about the range a little, and then if you would like to tell us what you think is the wine that best represents the Colli Orientali and why.
This is a not easy answer, because like you said,
it's a tough one.
Also because you know that in our zones there are so many varieties and it depends, you know, from the history of our hills, that in one century changed three different nationalities, because until the First World War we were under Austrian Hungarian Empire. And then between the two world wars, you know, there was this borderline between Italy and Yugoslavia. And so it's an incredible history in our zone. And how you say very well, my production is principally focused on the native varieties like Friulano, like Ribolla Gialla, Malvasia, Refosco, Picolit. But for me, one of my wines that represent very well our zone and our tradition is the Pinot Grigio, Ramato. Even if Pinot Grigio is an international variety, in our zone, it finds, you know, this traditional vinification so characteristic that for me, even if we can say that is native, it's sure one of the most typical wine of our hills. Sure, the Pinot Grigio Ramato, I answer. So,
yeah. Well, this is this will be my next question, because, as I mentioned at the very beginning, this is the wine that made me discover Spezzonia 12 years ago, and particularly the Riserva is a legend. I mean, I had the pleasure to try some vintages from the 90s when I was when I visited you, and it's quite astonishing. How do you do that?
Nice question also this.
How do you make a Pinot Grigio so special and age worthy?
60 years of experience in this traditional vinification with the skin contact, and most of all, the passion for this wine, Helena. Because, you know, many people still today see to the Pinot Grigio like, you know, a variety of second class quality, not so important. Instead, for us, Pinot Grigio, when it's planted in the right areas and you understand how to best manage it from an agronomical and oenological point of view, well, it can give the birth to an incredible wine with such a great complexity and capacity of evolution over the time. And this is why my grandfather, from the really first vintage, always believed in this type of Pinot Grigio, I mean Ramato. Mm. And believe me that there were some periods where this kind of wine wasn't so fashionable like today, you know, because in the end of the 80s, 90s and beginning of 2000 was the period of the white paper wine. Very clean, very with a lot of filtration, very yellow light. And instead, our family always believe in this way of vinification of the Pinot Grigio, because we were really convinced that contact with the skin could help this variety to better express its identity and the link with the place where it grows. And our dream is always this, to put in a bottle the relationship between the variety and the land and the zone. And so for us in the Pinot Grigio, sure, the skin contact vinification is the one that gives more this identity. Also because we have to think that Pinot Grigio, it's a white, yes, but still today maintain several points in common with the grape from which it originates, the Pinot Noir. Because you know that the Pinot Grigio is a mutation of the Pinot Noir. Sometimes we're kidding that Pinot Grigio is the reddest of the white, or the whitest of the red. Because it can show really a truly fascinating aromatic complexity, and most of all, a tannic finesse in this version. And it's this that makes the difference, because thanks to the extraction of the tannic component from the skin and the seeds during the maceration, you know, the potential of the shelf life in the bottle can become very important. And if you remember, like you say, we opened together some vintages of the 90s that were still so fresh.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
1 week ago, I opened a bottle of my grandfather of the 1982, so 42 years old of wine. And Elena was still so incredibly young. The color was so nice to see, because this Ramato tonality was phosphorescent.
Fluorescent.
And most of all, what was incredible for me was that, you know, in that period, my grandfather don't think to create a wine for a long evolution.
No.
Sometimes they drink the wine directly from the barrel and nothing go in the bottle.
But just to clarify, how the vinification works. So you pick the grapes, of course, probably by hand, and you crush them and you macerate the juice with the skin, and the fermentation starts with the skin, right?
Exactly, Elena. And so it's a red vinification. Our family produced two kind of Pinot Grigio. One is a fresher version, where usually we use the grapes of the younger vineyard, the one in the lower part of the hill. And in that wine, usually we make 3-4 days of skin contact.
Okay.
So after the harvest of the grapes, we just crush a little bit. And we let the entire grape, also with the stem, in contact with the must. And in the fresh one, we let the skin until the beginning of the fermentation. When the fermentation starts, you know, with the carbon dioxide, the skin goes up to create the cap. And we take out the vat. Instead, in the Riserva Pinot Grigio, we make a very long skin contact, because we arrive to 2-3 months of skin contact until the end of the malolactic fermentation.
Okay, so.
Also because this Pinot Grigio Riserva born from the oldest vineyard of Pinot Grigio of our hill that was planted in the 60s. And so, you know, this kind of plant has got such a great balance that helped to obtain a very, very, very good maturation of the tannino component. And this is fundamental to make vinification like this. Because if you have some grapes with not a perfect ripeness or with just 1-2% of, you know, disease on the grapes, the result with the maceration, it's a disaster because the color obtain a bad tonality like maroon, oxidized, and the test became very, you know, tannic, very bitter, amaro. And so for that to arrive, to obtain a good result, this kind of vinification, the first fundamental thing is to find perfect ripeness, perfect quality of the grapes, and then to be able to understand exactly the perfect moment of harvest and how long to let the skin in contact with the must, because there isn't a mathematic formula. You have to be able every season to understand the vintage, the quality of the grapes, and then to make the right decision. You know that in the period of the 90s, when this kind of wine was not so well known abroad, because just a few words, in the past, in the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th, the Pinot Grigio was always made like this, with skin contact. Okay. Because we have to imagine that 100 years ago, the climate was completely different from today, much cooler. And so usually the harvest was always very late, also for this kind of variety, in October, the end of October. And so, you know, the temperatures were very low also in the cellar, because there weren't the technology of climatization or things like this. And so what the farmer saw? They saw that to help to obtain a good fermentation until the end, a period of contact with the skin helped a lot.
First.
Also because, you know, in the skin, there are a lot of nutrients that help the yeast, the microorganism to make a good quality of fermentation. And this was fundamental also because at the opposite, if they don't finish the fermentation, usually with the spring, the new fermentation could be also with acetic bacterium and things like this. And so with bad quality after of the wines. The second thing was also that, you know, the problem of the wines of that period was that they haven't got such a great structure. They don't have so much alcohol. And so the wine go in oxidation very fast. Also, from this point of view, was very important the maceration, because helped to obtain some tannino component that protect from the oxidation.
Yeah, antioxidant.
And so to help the wine in the evolution. And the third thing was that in that period of the history, the technology in the cellar was really archaic. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have a press machine like today and things like this. And so the work was made all by hand and was so difficult, so strong to make this kind of work. And the people, the farmer, saw that with a little bit of skin contact with the must, the skin became softer. And so was easier to press by hand and to obtain a little bit more wine. Because we don't have to forget that in that period of the history, the wine wasn't so much emotional like today. It was more food for the people and to have something to drink. In the 60s, this kind of tradition was almost disappear. I mean, the skin contact. Because, like I told you before, you need absolutely perfect grapes with perfect maturation. And in that period of the history, the idea for a lot of companies was to make more quantitative than quality. And so the result was always very bad. And for this, they started to produce in white. And in that period, you know, only the big company can go abroad to let discover the wines. And so the people abroad discovered the Pinot Grigio only in the white version, not in the Ramato style. And in fact, my father and grandfather a lot of time told to me how the first during the first presentation of this wine abroad, a lot of people said, "What is this? You put red inside. It's not Pinot Grigio. It's oxidate." And so we understood how much was important to make culture, to let understand to the people what is the Pinot Grigio. And so for that, we started to make a lot of testing inside of the vineyard, showing the color of the grapes to the people, and most of all, showing to the people how the Pinot Grigio can obtain a great identity thanks to this.
Well, that's very interesting, the history of this wine as well, because, as you rightly said, you know, perhaps it's not the most indigenous grape variety of Friuli, but definitely there's a strong link with land and the history of this area. But thank you so much, because I learned so much from this. I think I have a last question to ask, and we sadly have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I'd like to stay here for hours with you, but the very last question is, what is your short and long-term goals? What are your short and long-term goals as a grower and winemaker in 2 minutes?
Well, I tell you the truth. My dream is to continue on the path that the path undertaken in the best possible way, and to help make the world more aware of the great quality of our wines, Friuli wines. And so I really want to put all myself to dedicate my future to let discovery to the world what is Friuli, what we can do over here, and to let show that we are only in the beginning. Because for me, Friuli, you know, 30, 40 years ago was a very, very important zone in Italy, of course, still today, but in that period, if you go in all the restaurants, you always find the biggest part of the white wines from Friuli. Then there was a period where, also due to the climate change, you know, wasn't so easy in the beginning to find the right way for everyone, because the white wines became a little bit more strong with higher alcohol. Today, instead, I think our region is going into a great period thanks to the new generations and thanks to the capacity to understand in a better way, with a lot of study, the potential of our zone. And so here it is, my dream, to give my contribute in this.
Well, your dream is fantastic, but also I think that Friuli Venezia Giulia is a great, great ambassador in you. I do believe so.
Grazie. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Christian, for your time. I'm just waiting for Laika to connect again. And if there are questions from the audience, perhaps.
Hello.
Hi, Laika.
Hi. Thanks a lot for the conversation. And you're a really good storyteller, Christian. I'm listening through your conversation. It's very thorough. So thank you so much for having the time. And also, Elena, for introducing Christian to us. So before I wrap up, I want to say that the next Clubhouse is going to be next week on Tuesday. So we'll have Joan Harnish, and she will be interviewing Elisabetta Foratori. So that's it. And thanks a lot. Goodbye, everyone. Ciao. Ciao a tutti.
Thank you, Laika. Thank you, Christian.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.